Before I introduce our next guest to the show, I wanted to hit you with some reality when it comes to people accessing good quality food here in Connecticut. If you look at the website for Connecticut Food Share, the very first page that you'll open up will show you some very daunting numbers. According to estimates from Feeding America, more than 380,000 Connecticut residents struggle with hunger. More than 83,000 children are considered food insecure. When I use the number 380,000 Connecticut residents, that's 1 in 10 residents. So these are people from all walks of life. These are kids. These are working parents, seniors, people with disabilities. They could be your neighbors or your colleagues, even somebody in your own family, and you don't know it. Last year, the Connecticut Food Bank and Food Share distributed enough food to prepare nearly 40 million meals to people in need here in Connecticut. So even in a state as wealthy as ours, there is such a need for food assistance in every single community. And not only is there a need to get access to food, but quality food. That's the key here. Healthy, quality food that's accessible to everybody here in Connecticut. And so I'm personally very excited to have Chadwick Schroeder back on the show, Sustainability Manager for the City of Bridgeport, to specifically talk about the East End NRZ Market and Cafe and this healthy foods initiative, City Fresh, which is in partnership with the City of Bridgeport. Chadwick, hello, how are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing good. How about yourself?
You know, I can't complain, Chadwick. I appreciate you asking that question. But I do know that I have a lot of listeners and even people who I love personally who are considered food insecure. Talk to us a little bit about what Bridgeport is seeing and the significance of the East End Market.
Well, down in Bridgeport, we're seeing a lot of need, honestly. A lot of people... seniors on constrained incomes, working families that, you know, already doing multiple full-time jobs, barely able to make ends meet. And even the food that they're able to get is extremely high cost and not of the best quality. And that's where the East End NRZ Market and Cafe has really come in and done incredible work, not only in the East End, but for the entire city of Bridgeport. The East End is a food desert, which basically means there's not a grocery store within any close proximity of walking distance or driving distance to the local community. The East End Market is right on Stratford Ave, one of the busy roads in the city. And every single Sunday, they go out right onto the main road, right in the community with a whole table of fresh fruits and vegetables that in some cases they had to drive all the way up to Hartford to find, because that's where the Farmers Market Collaborative usually meets. And bring all those fresh produce back down to Bridgeport so residents have access to them.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Chadwick, but my understanding is this market also collaborates and partners with Connecticut farmers. Is that correct?
They certainly do. They certainly do. There's a few partnerships that are kind of ongoing with the East End NRZ Market and through our grant currently. We're working with a few farms in Bridgeport, as well as New Haven and Shelton.
I think this is extraordinary. And I know I'm pretty familiar with some of your social media content. And, you know, I do know there's a lot of push, obviously, for people knowing that they can get access to incredible food. It's locally grown. And also there's even opportunities I've seen, I think, a couple of times where people can even get jobs connected to this sector. Talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about this healthy foods initiative, City Fresh. When did that come about and why spark this?
So this initiative came about sometime around last year. There was a grant program offered by the State Department of Agriculture that was looking at supporting socially disadvantaged farmers. So farmers that basically haven't had access to a lot of things that other residents or farmers might have historically. And this program is really looking at how can we not only bring high quality, low cost food to Bridgeport, but also support some of those socially disadvantaged farmers to help them weather not only the COVID-19 pandemic, but get their legs under them as they start these new, often very risk-averse businesses.
Mm-hmm. And again, we have Chadwick Schroeder here, who is the Sustainability Manager for the City of Bridgeport, and we're talking about the East End NRZ Market and Cafe. How long has the Market and Cafe been up and running for Bridgeport?
I think the market got up and running starting in about 2017, and they started with those farmer markets on Sundays right on Stratford Ave.
Wow. So how often is it available for people to access?
So the City Fresh program, we're doing distributions on a weekly basis, and we're basically going right to the location where residents, whether they be seniors on constrained incomes or those working families, already are. So we're not necessarily asking people to either go out of their way or go somewhere else to get access to things that they kind of need local to them. So we've been going to like a senior apartment building, knocking on all the doors, letting people know that there's going to be a food distribution coming here, and basically getting them all ready, but trying to make sure we're not kind of going too far. And then the East End's Sunday market is on Sundays, I think starting in around June and running till September, October, depending on the length of the growing season.
I also love, if you're not following City Fresh, this initiative on social media, you should. You guys also will include recipes with some of the items that you can find at the market. That's a really great idea.
One of the other aspects of this program we're looking to do is make sure that residents are comfortable cooking with some of these different foods,
mm-hmm.
And also expanding their palates, as well as bringing their own infusion to kind of some of the recipes we might be offering. Because we're also offering some opportunities for them to share back recipes that we'll use later throughout the program. But some of them include, I know Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg have a recipe in there on how to basically grow tomatoes in a pot, to basically give people a way to do it themselves in a very like small kind of area, because not many people in Bridgeport have large backyards to start a garden in. Offering those very easy access points for people to get that healthy food, to see it in their house, in their kitchen, and feel comfortable preparing it, and then being able to access it, because that's really the key component, is how do we make sure residents, after this program's over, continue to be able to access and enjoy these high-quality fruits and vegetables.
Well, and the other thing, too, Chadwick, that I know we're dealing with here in Connecticut, but even across the country, is food is outrageously expensive. It is crazy. And what I love about some of these recipes, too, you're looking at very few ingredients and you're making it interesting. So, for example, like you've got Oprah's corn fritters on here, or Patty LaBelle's Mean Greens recipe. It doesn't take an awful lot, but it also kind of spices up what probably seems like a very bland, maybe sometimes boring vegetable like corn, or in this case, these I think are collard greens. So I also mm-hmm. love that aspect of it, that you're taking something, you're not making it more expensive, you're making it affordable, but also interesting. You're kind of empowering people to get creative with food.
That is certainly one of the biggest components, is letting people tell their story through food. You know, food isn't just that kind of boring basic thing. It's infused with the culture, the passion, the feelings, all those memories that often accompany a large dinner around a table, the meal you're sharing with that person you met at a work meeting. Food can really connect us when we empower it to tell the story of who we are and kind of how our community works within itself and with each other. And I think we're kind of doing that with this program, is empowering our residents to not only be able to access this healthy food, feel comfortable preparing it in creative ways, but also allowing them to share back their own kind of stories that will help uplifting as well.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to just update you, if you're not already following them on social media, you should be following Connecticut Grown. It's pretty incredible. You have the opportunity to obviously share recipes, get recipes, and also see what's going on with the very latest with the farmers markets in Bridgeport. We're talking about the East End NRZ Marketing Cafe. And we're talking to Chadwick Schroeder, who's the sustainability manager for the city. There's a huge announcement coming for the city, a 3-year grant, an award of $500,000 coming from the state's Department of Agriculture. This is going to the East End NRZ Marketing Cafe in partnership with the city of Bridgeport. What's happening, Chadwick? That's a lot of money. Congratulations. But what is that going towards?
Thank you very much, Melissa. It's going to support residents in Bridgeport getting access to healthy foods and high quality recipes as well.
So how exactly do we do that? Like what you're currently doing, which, like I said, is fabulous. I follow you on social media, and certainly I encourage other people to do the same. But how does this money now take you to the next level? What are the plans for it?
So we're looking to basically use this kind of money to help create there's these things called government food boxes, which typically like low-income residents will get. And we found that they don't really have the healthiest stuff in there. So we're using this grant money to essentially create food boxes that are healthy, high quality, and locally sourced, and distribute them to our low-income senior residents as well as our working families in the city of Bridgeport.
Okay. Wow. That's amazing. And my understanding, as we were talking about social media again, that apparently recipe posts are going to be starting this upcoming week. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you are correct.
That's really exciting. Okay. Oh, where are they coming from, might I ask? Where are these recipes and these posts coming from?
So we're bringing them together from a variety of sources, trying to touch on a lot of the cultural traditions that exist within Bridgeport, as well as finding some fun, innovative ways to get people excited about the food that they're eating and see themselves in it.
Okay. That's I think that's amazing. And again, you should be following Connecticut Grown, but also East End NRZ Marketing Cafe. They have their own Facebook page, actually, so you could follow that. Chadwick, tell us, do you find that people are feeling hopeful? Like I think about, and I've talked about this with Mayor Gannon before. I've talked about this with other city officials, Dan Onofrio of the BRBC. I find it bizarre that there is like this massive section of Bridgeport, and I'm sure it's the same for other municipalities, where there's not a grocery store in sight. I find that so, so bizarre. And I just wasn't sure if you could talk about really the just the importance of something like this that really was only created, what, 5-6 years ago, 2017? I mean, this is just addressing a huge need that I'm sure has been there for a very long time.
That is certainly true. One of the biggest kind of reasons that food deserts exist is not only the lack of an available grocery store local to the community, but also the transportation needs that often come with getting to the grocery store. If there's not adequate public transit and that person doesn't have their own personal automobile to transport them, they're essentially confined to about a half-mile boundary that's pretty reasonable to walk and carry all those groceries that they might be getting from a store. Mm-hmm. And we have that not only in one neighborhood in Bridgeport, but we have that in several neighborhoods in Bridgeport where we have high rates of people that don't have access to a personal automobile to transport themselves. And they also don't have a grocery store. So they typically end up relying on the corner stores, which don't have, you know, the highest quality fruits and vegetables.
Sure.
They also cost a lot more than they traditionally would in supermarket or in like a wholesale place that other people would typically be able to shop at because they have that kind of access in their neighborhood.
Now, I'm nervous to ask this question, but only because I know with farmers markets, they are seasonal. Is the East End NRZ Marketing Cafe, is that also seasonal? Like, is there a portion of the year where there it's shut down just because we have, you know, we have winter here in Connecticut?
It certainly is. That happens with a lot of our farmers markets across the city. The East End NRZ Marketing Cafe does continue to operate throughout the entirety of the fall and the winter. They offer a few different services apart from just kind of locally sourced agriculture. One of their great programs actually looks to bring surplus food from the grocery stores in the surrounding Fairfield County area, as well as restaurants that would have otherwise just kind of been thrown out. Mm. And they're still obviously healthy, fresh, high quality and everything. But Food Rescue, in collaboration with Debbie Sims and the East End NRZ Marketing Cafe, get those brought all the way to Bridgeport, and then they redistribute them out to the local community, the food pantries, the food banks, really in need and who are kind of dealing with people on that level every day.
Wow. And I know just looking at the release about this $500,000, I know some of the funding is going to be used to support historically excluded farmers, apparently, which is amazing. And so my question, I think, Chadwick, to before I let you go, if there are farmers or there are store owners or there are people who would like to be able to contribute to the East End NRZ Marketing Cafe or to just bettering the food insecurity issues that we're seeing, is there a way? What's the best, I guess, way to get in touch with you or to be part of this incredible work that's being done?
Any interested people can reach out either directly to the East End NRZ Marketing Cafe, or anyone can also send me an email. My email is on the city website as well as my phone number. And we welcome any farms, interested parties, anyone that's looking to support this work. We would love to have you a part of this work. You know, teamwork is really what makes things succeed at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's so true. And again, I do encourage folks to follow not just Connecticut Grown on all social media platforms, but also on Facebook. You can follow the East End NRZ Market and Cafe, find some great recipes, know what's going on, be in the know. We always talk about that on the show. And Chadwick Schroeder, I really appreciate you giving us the heads up and keeping us in the know about this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Melissa. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak about this very important initiative in Bridgeport.
Absolutely. Yep. We'll always, always make time for something like this. It's so important. And again, it impacts 1 in 10 Connecticut residents, believe it or not. So thank you. I really appreciate it. Again, Chadwick Schroeder, the sustainability manager for the city of Bridgeport here on WICC.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio. Now on Melissa in the Morning.
On WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
You know, I'm reading about this week, Avelo Airlines now launching its 18th direct flight. It's going to start offering service from Tweed over to Puerto Rico starting in November. Those flights traveling between Tweed and San Juan will be only on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And to start, the introductory offer will be $99 each way. Not too shabby. You know, it made me think, though, about how excited I was. I think Dan Onofrio was a little bit excited as well, but he at least has, a better head on his shoulders when it comes to the reality of thinking that we were going to see commercial airlines come back to Sikorsky Airport right here in Stratford. And that seemed like more of a reality last year when the Connecticut Airport Authority had made an offer. It was accepted by the city of Bridgeport to take over Sikorsky Airport. And they had even been in talks with kind of like a secret. We didn't know. Well, it wasn't secret, but we don't know which airline they were in talks with. But they were getting somewhere. They were making, you know, some headway on bringing back a commercial airline to Sikorsky. And now we learned just last month that they're out. I mean, it sort of changed a little bit where they were like, you know what, we don't want to own it anymore, but we'll operate it. And then it went from we're going to operate it to, you know what, I think we're just going to step away from this project for a hot second. And now it's like, wait, what? So I was curious, Dan Onofrio, good morning, what you thought about this. We never got to talk about this.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer for the region, Melissa.
Huge
bummer.
When
you first... When you first started talking about Avelo in Puerto Rico, I thought you were going to offer me tickets to Puerto Rico.
You know, if you would like to go to Puerto Rico, I have not been since I was like 10 years old. I would love to go back. And if it's for like research purposes or for business practice or whatever, I'm thrilled to go to Puerto Rico. Let's find some kind of conference or reason to go. I'm fine with that. Yes.
There you go. We'll Absolutely. Have to do a show on the road, right?
There you go. I like it. I love the idea. But, you know, again, yeah, Tweed just seems to be expanding Avelo more and more. I know that that's a controversial thing. I'm not going to get into that because I know there are obviously people who are very upset about the expansion of Tweed. This will be their 18th direct route that they are offering out of New Haven. So not getting into the controversy, but from a consumer standpoint, Tweed is crushing it. I mean, Avelo is just a huge success, it seems like, for especially southern to middle of the state Connecticut residents who are sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. Do I go to Bradley or do I go down to Westchester or even LaGuardia? And now Tweed is sort of that option. And I remember around maybe winter time, you and I were talking about, wow, could we maybe see some competition over at Sikorsky? We knew the CAA had been talking to some kind of airline about coming to the Bridgeport Stratford area. And it was getting really exciting. But man, things took a turn. What in the world happened?
Yeah, like I said, it's a bit of a disappointment for the region. And, have always said, just the business community, and I think, the Connecticut Airport Authority saw, as well as the governor's office, that, residents down in along the shoreline, the opportunity to head north to head to a regional airport, there's an opportunity there. And, Governor Lamont, when he came into office, said that, he supported a South Central Connecticut regional airport. New Haven obviously is way ahead than where we are here in Bridgeport. There has been issues with, people got to remember that the airport itself, Sikorsky Memorial, that is, You know, it's based in Stratford. So the property is in Stratford, but it's been owned and operated by the city of Bridgeport. And frankly, you know, the city of Bridgeport's been operating it at a significant loss year over year.
Right.
So this opportunity for the CAA, the Connecticut Airport Authority, to come in and say, hey, you know, we would like to purchase this property and purchase the airport and operate it for you. You know, it was a win all around. You know, so the negotiations were on a really good start. I think they had a private airline that was willing at that point to commit to the airport. And the reality is, you know, that there were environmentals, you know, that were a bit concerning. So that kind of dialed their interest back a little bit. Nothing earth shattering that, you know, we can't overcome. But there were complications there that they didn't initially expect. And then that went from, you know, purchasing, as you mentioned, the airport and operating it to just plain old, all right, we'll lease it from you. And we'll, you know, would maybe an option to purchase down the road, which everyone was still just as excited because, you know, frankly, the city of Bridgeport, you know, doesn't really have the capacity to manage a regional airport. I mean, and the CAA has done a great job up at Raleigh. So we still felt like it was a huge win. But I think where the straw that broke the camel's back is the gas, the tax on the gas. So in this past fiscal year, the CAA had a lot of money. You know, part of the funding to operate Sikorsky Memorial was coming from, you know, the taxes and on the gas. And the way they did the budget, I don't know all the details, so I apologize. But those dollars basically went away. So Kevin Dillon and the CAA said, okay, time out. We've got to rethink, you know, how do we do this that's going to be economical for the CAA and where the, you know, where the opportunity to operate it makes sense. And I think they just called a timeout. You know, I don't think they're away. I mean, they're definitely, you know, they've hit the brakes for sure. But I do think there's an opportunity down the road. The door is still open, you know, and I think just, you know, by the length of time this has all occurred, Melissa, you know, sometimes the things we need to move quicker. And, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, in hindsight, probably we could have done some things differently, get the right people around the table at the right time, you know, years ago to resolve this. Because as you know, there's another caveat here with the town of Stratford that, you know, they basically threw their hat in the ring and said, hey, you know, if you're going to sell this thing, we want to buy it. So, you know, there's opportunities there that we maybe didn't explore thoroughly. And, you know, I think we just might have missed it in this go around. But I don't think, you know, it's dead. I think, you know, I think we just got to continue to work on this, get our ducks in a row. The FAA is still very supportive of Sikorsky Memorial. You know, they have contributed some dollars and the state has contributed some dollars to do some enhancements on one of the runways, which has to be done regardless of the city owning it or not. So we still have some work to do. And I think let's just continue to move forward and put the airport in a position where it can be a resource, not just for people that live in the region, but businesses. You know, that Bridgeport itself with the ferry and, you know, we've talked about it with the trains and 95 and access to Route 8 and the Merritt. You throw in the airport there, it's a huge thing for businesses as well, you know, flight air executives or whomever coming in and out. You know, it's a big deal. And to not have to deal with 95 headed south to Westchester or into New York to LaGuardia is amazing. I flew out of Avello in New Haven earlier this year, and it was just great. You know, it took me 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's really, really convenient. I had to do a little bit of math here and bring up some old information, but according to reports in May of 2022, the airport, the Sikorsky Airport, loses an average of $500,000 per year, which the city of Bridgeport owns it. It is located in Stratford, but the city owns it, and they eat that money each and every year. And Dan Onofrio is here of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. Dan, from a business perspective, when you're losing that much money, that seems very significant, no? I mean, has Bridgeport talked about how they can recover or handle losing that much money for much longer? Like, I would think that they are almost desperate to just kind of unload this thing.
Yeah, you know, I'm not in those meetings, Melissa, to understand really the impact on the budget and all that other stuff. I do know that the budget this particular year, only because City Council sits on our Bridgeport Chamber Board, and they had mentioned that a couple of things. One is they did get the airport over this last fiscal year with the help of the CAA back in the black, which is a good thing. And I do believe they allocated some dollars to not as much as I think the airport commissioner wanted, but they did allocate some dollars to kind of keep that thing running, hopefully in the black this year as well. So, and the details of what the expenses are and all that stuff, I couldn't really comment on, but like any business, when you're losing money on something, you want to right side the ship. And I think, we had our opportunity with the CAA to offload that thing and really get it in the appropriate hands. So, we'll see, have to wait and see what happens and what transpires. I am going to be very curious to see how hard the town of Stratford now will step in. I do know that they are still very interested and I think committed to making something happen there. I don't know if we'll be if the town of Stratford can manage it themselves. I don't think that's their intent either. But I do think they're looking to offload it since it is in Stratford and take it on and hopefully find an appropriate operator for the airport.
Yeah, I was curious and I was going to reach out to Mayor Laura Hoidick about this because I know the CAA last year had said they had committed to putting more than $60 million of improvements into the airport. And again, the goal was to bring back commercial service, which hasn't really been there since the 1990s. And I am curious if Stratford, especially seeing like a big player like CAA say, hey, you know what, environmental reasons and pricing, we're walking away from this thing, at least for now. I'm wondering if Stratford has changed its tune or if they still feel very confident knowing what they're dealing with in saying, hey, okay, but we feel like we still are the right people for the job. But I haven't heard from Mayor Hoidick about that, but I wasn't sure if maybe you did.
Yeah, no, I just know from the Stratford Chamber meetings and working closely with the town, I do think that they're still very interested. I think they're going to probably come up with their strategy on how to move forward and address this with the city of Bridgeport. And I think a lot's going to depend on whether they can find an appropriate operator outside of the CAA taking it and seeing it, because obviously ultimately those costs are going to go to them. I mean, they need to build a terminal, first of all, which is a big nut, So, and then coupled with the improvements on the runways and all that stuff. But the interest for Stratford clearly is that, they want to control and basically ensure that any expansion that they have a seat at the table. I think that's their biggest issue. They're really concerned about the runway, the length of the runway, and making sure it doesn't go, doesn't get extended too much. The nice thing with the operator, CAA, and some other partners that they had at the table, I don't believe that the runway would have had to be expanded all that much. That was a good thing. The technology now and the type of flights and the planes that are being built, they don't need as much length as they had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I mean, we'll have to just see who comes to the table and what opportunities present themselves. But, I think we all agree across the region that Sikorsky is an opportunity. That Sikorsky Memorial Airport is an opportunity for the region. It can really be a shot in the arm if we can get that thing, operable again for commercial flight.
Yeah, certainly. Well, we'll see what happens. And Dan, appreciate getting your perspective always on these local business stories. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Enjoy the beautiful weather. Hopefully you get outside today a little bit.
Thank you. You too, Dan. Appreciate it. Dan Onofrio is the president of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and he's here on WICC. We have our monthly check-in with the American Red Cross Connecticut chapter. Longtime volunteer John Godin and a good friend to the morning show is back. Hey, what's up, John? How are you?
I'm doing well, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And I know we're going to do a quick update on blood donations in just a minute. But first, I did want to talk about hurricane preparedness. There is a chance of 12 to 17 named storms this year. That's according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Their predictions for the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season, which is going on, actually. People don't realize it's happening right now until November 30th. 5 to 9 storms could become hurricanes. And we may see as many as 4 major hurricanes just this year. So, John, let's start with making sure that people are prepared. What are some things that people should be doing to plan ahead? Let's start with steps for older adults.
Well, I think what you have to realize is not everyone is as independent as others. So folks who are maybe seniors don't have as much flexibility or can do a lot of things on their own behalf. So what I tell folks is make sure that seniors are prepared in the event of the storm. So a few things that they have to consider is make sure that they have all their medicines listed, a lot of a list of all of their health conditions, allergies, medications, prescription records, so that if something happens, that information is first at hand for someone who may be supporting them, a caregiver, a family member, a friend. I also like to make sure that older adults have, if they can, 30 days of medications with them at any time, because if you lose power and the local area is impacted by a large storm, it may not be as easy to get to a pharmacy to get their prescription filled.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, what you want to make sure for older adults or adults or individuals who may be subject to disability, make sure you have a plan to give them support in the time of a major storm impact.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that you just mentioned, John, that I think is, you know, certainly for older adults with medication, absolutely. But I do think, you know, we ran into this issue actually a couple weeks ago. My son is a very, very picky eater. So he has to have a Pediasure, which is a very common, almost like a protein source drink that toddlers sometimes and young children will have if they feel like they're kind of not stunting their growth, but they're not getting enough nutrients in their diet. So he has to have a Pediasure every single morning. 2 weeks ago, horrible storm blows through and blows out of, you know, Connecticut, like no big deal. But we woke up the next morning. I look in the fridge. There's no Pediasure. No worries. I'm just going to go get some. A massive tree came down and blocked our driveway. We couldn't leave until 2 o'clock that afternoon. It was a weekend. Public Works wasn't out. This was a city tree that came down. Many other trees had come down in the area, so tree cutters were all very, very busy. And again, my son survived. He's fine. But it was one of those instances where we were like, yikes, especially if we know that a storm is coming, even if we don't think it's going to be significant, it's so important that everybody just has what they need and that they keep track of weather reports. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, we have a saying when it comes to hurricane preparedness. You have to get a kit together. You have to make a plan and you have to be informed when a storm is approaching. Mm-hmm. So getting a kit, going to the example you gave regarding Pediasure, we always tell people if a storm is coming, they should have, if they stay in their local area, at least in their home, they should try to have about 2 weeks of non-perishable food available in their home, along with 2 weeks of water supplies if power is lost.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks of water supplies is a fair amount of water, because every individual should have 1 gallon of water per person per day.
Right. Yeah, so, that's a good point.
So you kind of, that get a kit, make sure you have batteries for all of your devices. Make sure you have a flashlight or a lantern that is powered by a battery. Make sure you have your cell phone charger. That's all part of the basic get a kit, make a plan, and get ready for any event that may occur.
Yeah, that's a good point. And another thing, John, going back to seniors especially, we always focus on checking on our senior neighbors in the wintertime, right? Like, oh, do we need to get them shoveled out? Are they have they lost heat? You know, so we think about it a lot in the wintertime, but we really don't think about it as much during hurricane season or like the summertime, for example. Would you agree, though, that that's got to be something else that you're keeping in mind while planning ahead? The idea of identifying, hey, I have a senior neighbor, I have a senior relative, and do they know that I'm a contact that should be checking in with them or should go and see how they're doing in the event of a storm?
Yeah, I always encourage every family we used to have a running joke within our family during the pandemic. We had what we called senior checks. So we call my parents, we call my wife's parents, we call the aunts. Every family or friend of a loved one or friend or acquaintance that they know who may be older, try to have a phone tree in place or a contact tree in place and have someone assigned for an individual who may not be as mobile or as independent as others. And it really is a peace of mind for the family. I have a plan for my dad. I have a plan for my in-laws. We have a plan for aunts of the extended family. At least that's in our family. And I encourage all families to do the same.
And John Godin, who's with the Red Cross here in Connecticut, what about people with disabilities? What else would you add to that list of steps to be prepared in a storm?
You know, a couple of interesting things you have to think about is if someone has a wheelchair or has trouble walking, God forbid something happens on their property, can they get out of the home? Is there a wheelchair ramp that needs to be unblocked for them to be able to get out? Are there ways that they can take care of a service animal if power is lost, access to food is lost, because that service animal may be very critical to that individual living on a day-to-day basis? If power is lost and someone is on oxygen, is there an alternate source of power to keep that oxygen processing going for the individual? Those are things that people don't think about for those that may have disabilities or restrictions when they live in their home. And that's something you have to consider about as far as making that plan.
Mm-hmm. I know we were talking about hurricane preparedness, but I also would be remiss if I was talking to the Red Cross and didn't ask for an update on blood supply. And we have John Godin here, who's a longtime volunteer and a friend to the morning show. John, could you give us an update where we're at with the blood shortage?
Yeah, the Red Cross needs your help to prevent a looming blood shortage. I mean, you have trauma patients, transplant recipients, those undergoing treatment need blood on a regular basis and appreciate the generosity of our donors historically and in the future. What I tell people, and they don't realize this, is the American Red Cross, we need 29,000 units of red blood cells every day to serve the needs of patients. And what I also reinforce is blood is the type of product that it doesn't stay good forever.
Mm.
For instance, red blood cells are good for 6 weeks. Platelets, which is the clotting agent in blood that can be given on a regular basis, are only good for 5 days. And those blood donations come from individuals. So we always have to replenish that supply. And I want people to realize that.
Mm-hmm. Now, platelets, wow, that's not a very long shelf life for them. When you go to give blood, though, John, are you able to say, I want to donate blood and platelets? Like, how does that work? I always hear about you could donate blood, and then I'll have people who say, oh, I'm going back to donate my platelets today. How does that work?
Well, a regular blood donation for everyone who's given blood in the past typically takes about an hour start to finish, but the actual giving of the blood itself is maybe 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a regular blood donation. Platelet donations is a longer process and cannot be given at every one of our typical blood donor locations because it's approximately 3 hours.
Because
I'm not a platelet expert by all means. But what happens is, as you go through the process of platelet donations, the process extracts the platelets from your blood, but puts everything else back into your blood. That's why it takes such a longer period of time. So we have two main donation areas for platelet donations. One is in Farmington, one is right down the street that we just opened up in Milford from the WICC offices. Yeah. So we encourage people to give blood all the time. If you can give platelet donations, we encourage you to do that as well. People can give red blood donations every 8 weeks. Platelets can actually be done every 7 days, believe it or not. But you can only donate blood or platelets a certain amount of times during the year. But all individuals realize that blood is not manufactured. It comes from humans.
Mm.
So, you know, what I encourage folks who are O negative blood donors is to give on a regular basis because O negative is the universal blood type that typically ERs, if they don't know the blood type of an individual, you can universally give O negative.
Mm-hmm. And again, the Red Cross has been reportedly seeing a decline in donations throughout the summer, which does sometimes happen, but it does make it very, very hard for hospital shelves to stay stocked with blood products. So if you want to make an appointment to give blood or platelets, you can use the Red Cross Blood Donor app. You could visit redcrossblood.org, or you can call them directly, 1-800-RED-CROSS. That's 1-800-733-2767. John Godin, I always appreciate having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming back on, and I'm sure we'll talk again next month.
Thank you, Melissa, and we always appreciate your partnership.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk to you in September.
Looking forward to it. John Godin again with the Red Cross for the Connecticut chapter right here on WICC.